The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome to our Introduction to Mindfulness Practice, Series 2. Some years ago, I tried doing this, and I call it Intermediate Mindfulness, but that didn't seem quite. Then people were waiting for the Advanced Mindfulness. But if I do Series 2, then we could do Series 3 and 4. We can just keep going on. But the reason I'm offering this is that every year, two or three times a year, I offer a basic intro to mindfulness class. And it seems like it's valuable for many people. And I enjoy it quite a bit, teaching it, a chance to kind of introduce kind of some of the basic practices of mindfulness. And recently when I taught it, I thought it was kind of a pity that it ended, because it just felt like such a nice way of offering the practice and stuff. So I came up with this idea of this series too, as kind of a continuation of the six-week introductory course that we do here at IMC. And so it's meant as being kind of a continuation, so it's hopefully all of you have either taken that intro class or kind of know those basic ideas of mindfulness. And if you haven't done it before, then I don't think it's going to hurt to come for this series here. And I'll try to introduce enough of the basic aspects of the practice so that it works for everybody. For those of you who have not done the regular intro class, it is online. If you go on our website, onto the Audio Dharma link to it, previous six-week intro classes that I've given are, the recordings are there, and you could listen to it if you'd like and supplement what's happening here. So this is a four-week class, and each week I'll offer some different basic ideas. And for today, the topic fits underneath the general idea of monitoring, being able to monitor oneself, monitor one's experience, and in this, and I'll give you some homework I have here, handouts, that at the end of the day, and those of you who don't like homework can call it exercises. And for those of you who'd like, you can take it home, and perhaps you'll find it useful to supplement what's talked about here and give you a little more focus for your meditation practice at home. And I would say that this kind of introductory class works a lot better if you have a daily meditation practice at home. So if you don't, then I would recommend that for these 4 weeks that you start one. And might take a little bit of discipline or a little bit reorganizing some of the things you do, but it's very beneficial to have a daily meditation practice. And if you don't have it, then doing the experiment for 4 weeks and then seeing how it affects your life is a very interesting experiment. After the 4 weeks, then stop for a week or two, and then compare what it was like, what your life was like when you did it, and what is life is like when you don't do it. There is a saying in English that a watched pot doesn't boil. The comparable saying, or I don't know if comparable, but a similar there's a Buddhist saying that a watched mind brings happiness. So don't watch your pots, but do watch your mind. And it's one of the very special characteristics of human beings is the capacity for self-reflection, self-awareness. We can have an emotion, and seemingly animals have emotions, but there's a high degree of self-awareness around having the emotions that humans are capable of. You can be angry, and not only can you know that you're angry, really know it, boy, I'm really angry, you can reflect afterwards, remember I was angry, and think about it. But even more interesting, from the point of view of mindfulness, you can know that you're angry, and you can know that you know. Now, to know that you know, to know, be in the knowing, to be able to watch and to see what's going on, brings happiness as long as it's freeing the mind, from the way the mind latches on, locks on, freezes on, blocks, tightens up, you know, all the ways in which the mind gets attached. The idea of watching, of mindfulness, ultimately is to help us to free the mind, to lubricate the mind or the heart, so it can flow and move and be free rather than be stuck. And so the watching is meant to help that. Now, so that's a kind of this process of monitoring, of watching what's going on, being present for what's going on. It only works if, one of the ways it works is that the unwatched mind, the mind that's not being watched, all too easily falls into habit, habitual ways of thinking, all too easily then becomes under the sway of emotional reactivity, psychological reactivity, and it comes under the sway of our desires and our hates, and our fears, in such a way that the mind will then lock on, our attention locks on, it fixates on all kinds of different things. So a few weeks ago, a lot of people were fixating on the swine flu. And it was quite impressive to see the degree to which whole nations were fixating on it. And now people aren't so fixated on that particular issue, and now people are looking at other things. And so the mind chooses different things. And the reason I chose the swine flu is that now people are stepping back and looking at that obsession that we had with it and wondering how realistic it was, how well it was based in the actual cause, and the idea that there was probably a lot of fear that was feeding it as well. And now there are scholars who are beginning to do research about how different countries locked on to the swine flu virus and how they handled it in different ways. Media locked on different things. So the unwatched mind easily locks onto things, easily freezes around things, easily gets attached to things, or easily takes in things from the environment, from the world, and then is influenced by them, sometimes to our detriment. And there's plenty of people in our society who get paid a lot of money to influence you. And we're surrounded by people who want to kind of influence us. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not intentional, but it has a big impact. And so the experiences of our life, we take them in, and sometimes they get lodged inside. They get kind of stuck there, or our reaction to them gets stuck. So the unwatched mind has these dangers to it. The watched mind is meant to create space and openness to allow the inner life to move and flow and not to get stuck. Now, in order to do that, the watched mind, it's very important that the watched mind not be a self-conscious mind. And some people confuse mindfulness with being self-conscious. And to be self-conscious is to take our experience and to measure it according to some standard of what we think is a right way of being and a wrong way of being a self in this world. Judging ourselves according to the material that's coming in. I'm good and I'm bad based on what's happening. And some people have such a strong habit of being self-conscious that it's very hard to be mindful because as soon as they're mindful of something, they react to what they're aware of. And there's a saying that goes that self-knowledge is seldom good news. And it's, you know, sometimes it definitely is. But to the degree to which sometimes turning in and becoming aware of our motivations, our feelings, our reactions, to the degree to which those things maybe sometimes are not in our best interest, sometimes are not so salutary, it's very easy to feel, it just proves how bad a person I was. I got angry, my mind got angry, this proves I'm a lousy person. That's to become self-conscious. And so in order for the watched mind, to bring happiness, we have to be able to free ourselves from the way in which we start judging, reacting to what is seen there. For some people, that's some of the beauty of mindfulness, or the delight, of joy of mindfulness, the idea of being able to be present for our experience, without needing to judge the experience. It means that when we sit down to do mindfulness meditation, you're allowed to be exactly as you are. It's kind of meant to be a very accepting situation. Some people feel like they're coming home when they come and do mindfulness practice because of this feeling that, you know, at home you can pick your nose, right? At least when you're alone. And, you know, it's a comfortable place to kind of just walk around in your underwear or something. I don't do that. And you can just be yourself. So the idea of sitting down to meditate and just being yourself, for some people find a great relief if there isn't that kind of feeling, oh, I shouldn't be this way, I should be differently or something. So what we're doing in mindfulness is learning to watch what's happening here. In order to support that watching, we're also trying to cultivate calm, develop the ability to be calm. And those two go together, where we're trying to notice what's there, to watch, and then we're trying to relax or soften around what's there. To acknowledge what's present, to see what's there, and then to soften. And the final thing I want to say before we try a little sitting is the watching of mindfulness. The mindfulness is not an vague kind of presence. It's not kind of like, oh, I'm here and things are happening and, you know, just kind of things are happening through me and I'm kind of here, it's kind of vague. Mindfulness has a certain kind of precision to it, where it's the best way of describing it perhaps, it's an acknowledging of an experience as it's happening. So someone could walk in here and we can kind of be aware, I'm present, I'm aware, I'm aware that someone comes into the room. That's one thing. But to actually turn to the person and say, welcome, I see you, you're here. The person feels acknowledged. There's a big difference. So to be able to have something happen in your meditation practice, a breath happens. You can be aware of it. That's nice. But to really offer the kind of presence that would be called an acknowledgement, it's a different thing. And so what we're trying to do here as we do this practice is to meet what's happening with a kind of presence or kind of knowing where there's an acknowledgement. Oh, this is an in-breath. See an in-breath. Here's an out-breath. Here's an itch. Really acknowledge it. Here's a sound. Car drives by outside. Here's a roar of a motor. Really acknowledge, oh, that's what's happening. Or more particularly, right now, listening is happening. Oh, that's what's happening right now. And that acknowledgement is meant to kind of, in a sense, ground us in the experience in such a way that we're not caught in the experience. We're not caught up in the experience. It's kind of like standing your ground. Here I am, in a sense, and I'm going to recognize that. Not in a self-conscious way, but just here, fully present, this is what's happening. So this gets particularly interesting with emotions, because for some people they get swept into their emotions. Or thinking. We get swept along by our thinking. But to step back with a watching mind and acknowledge, oh, here is sadness. But to acknowledge in such a way that the sadness is kind of seen, but in the seen acknowledgement you realize that which acknowledges is not sad. That which acknowledges is not sad. That which acknowledges that you're thinking is not really thinking. It's just clear seeing, a clear kind of, that's what's happening. So there's kind of a strength to the knowing of mindfulness. So it's not meant to be vague. The calming aspect of the meditation practice is that when you acknowledge something, then it's helpful to think of that you're trying to, then the next thing you try to do is not just kind of go quickly on to the next thing, but see if for a moment there can be some sense of softening with that experience. Not necessarily relaxing, because that might be harder to do, but even if there's tension, like tension in your shoulders, you acknowledge a tension, really recognize that's there, and then see, can there be a sense of softening around it? Maybe a sense of more space around it, or even the way we hold it perhaps softens. Maybe it relaxes, the shoulders relax. But or maybe it's just simply the way that we know, that acknowledgement, that knowing mind that sees the tension, that stays a little bit soft, as opposed to bearing down on the experience or resisting the experience. There's kind of a softening there. So there's an acknowledgement and then a softening. The acknowledgement borders on, is kind of deliberate. There's a deliberate quality to mindfulness. Oh, I'm going to know something, and I'm going to really know it. It can seem like work to do that. But initially it might seem like extra work, but after a while it becomes second nature. But more importantly, it becomes an alternative to letting the mind wander off in its normal distractions. And when the mind wanders off in its normal distractions, that is much more tiring than a mind that's trained to be present clearly in a deliberate way. To be deliberate and clear and not caught by anything allows for the mind to come to some kind of deep rest. So that's the introduction to the basic idea. That's a little bit kind of taking the mindfulness idea to a little bit next level from what we did in the first course. And now I'd like us to do a little meditation. So for this, take a posture in a chair on the floor that's a little bit more alert than you would normally sit. So not tense, but especially if you pay attention to your spine, to sit up with your spine a little bit straighter than you normally would. So you feel a little bit that your spine has a feeling of maybe being alert. And then, so really do it. Sit up. And then gently close your eyes. And the sense of now we're going to do something deliberate is a helpful way of marking the fact that we're not going to allow our mind to continue with business as usual. This is a new time, a new place. This transition is happening here. And one way to mark that transition is to deliberately take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, to settle into your body. To relax into your body. As you take a deeper breath in, perhaps you can feel like you're massaging yourself from the inside, stretching, expanding the torso, the rib cage. And as you exhale, you're letting go, relaxing. Perhaps it's possible that as you breathe out, you put aside the thoughts and concerns you have. And then let your breathing return to normal. And scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places of holding or tension that you might be able to soften. Perhaps you can soften your belly. Letting your stomach hang forward a little bit. Perhaps you can soften your face. So the muscles of your face fall away from your bones. Perhaps the shoulders can relax, shoulders and the shoulder blade area. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. The inhalation is distinct from the exhalation. As you become aware of breathing in, let there be a clear acknowledgement, a kind of knowing that clearly kind of recognizes the presence of an inhalation. And then as you exhale, kind of clear knowing, clear acknowledgement of the experience of breathing out. And as you acknowledge and each in-breath and out-breath, let yourself really feel the experience of breathing in and breathing out. Feel what the body experiences, the movement, the expanding and contracting, the sensations. Then perhaps experiment a little bit that the way that you experience, the way you acknowledge your breathing is relaxed or soft, easy. There's perhaps an ease to each moment that acknowledges a breathing in and a breathing out. And if your mind, your attention is pulled away from the breath by anything at all, when you notice that, in a simple and clear way, acknowledge what the mind is now involved in. Let there be a clear acknowledgement of thinking or feeling or hearing or whatever it might be. And see if you can find a way to acknowledge that it's kind of like stepping back or being free from the concern. You're recognizing it, but you're not caught in it. As we continue, experiment a little bit with how you acknowledge whatever you're noticing. See if you can find a way to acknowledge that feels relaxed, but also is kind of clear, decisive, precise. Experiment and see if the acknowledgement helps you become independent of what is being acknowledged. And then see if you can maintain a relaxed, easygoing, steady flow of noticing, of acknowledging whatever occurs, whatever arises, whether it's the breathing or sound or whatever. Stay with the noticing, stay with acknowledgement, instead of slipping in to involvement with thoughts or involvement with feelings. Stay with your mindfulness, stay with the acknowledgement of what is happening, whether it's staying with your breathing or anything else. But then notice the quality of that acknowledgement, the quality of the knowing. Is it lax or is it alert? Is it relaxed or tense? Is it unmotivated? Or is there energy or motivation for it? What has the upper hand, your preoccupations or the mindfulness? As you're sitting here, is there anything in your experience which would be useful to acknowledge that has not been acknowledged yet? If you're impatient for the end, what happens if you clearly acknowledge the impatience? What needs to be acknowledged so that you're more fully here? And then the last minute of the sitting, can you please review a little bit what this sitting was like? What it was like to experiment with this quality of acknowledgement as an aspect of mindfulness? There's a very strong association people have with meditation practice being relaxing, being calming. And many people, that's why they come to meditation, because they have a tremendous need to alleviate their stress or their tension, and they've heard that meditation brings calm. And it is, in fact, that's true. Meditation can be very helpful, a very calming effect on a life and on a person. However, it's possible to overemphasize the calm side of meditation. Sometimes when calm is what people are emphasizing, there's sometimes a feeling that I'm not supposed to take any responsibility. I'm supposed to just let go and relax. And just, if I just let go and do anything, something wonderful will happen to me. Now, to the degree to which people are wound up, doing nothing helps them to unwind. So that's good. But the mindfulness practice that comes out of Buddhism is closely connected to the idea of taking responsibility for ourselves, responsibility for our experience, in particular responsibility for how we react and respond to the world. And so the deliberate side of mindfulness is part of this beginning to take responsibility to kind of, in a sense, kind of not just to relax and let things happen, but also to meet what's happening, to arouse within us a capacity to be free from the various currents of the mind that sweep us this way and that way, the reactivity of the mind. So if I, if I have some wonderful fantasy sitting here, or if I get into some kind of vendetta in my mind, sitting here, the mind gets pulled off into that world of vendettas, or world of fantasy, world of desires of something, whatever it might be, then I'm not taking responsibility. I'm not kind of, in a sense, in control. But if I clearly, if I try to take too much control and try to stop what's going on, and have something else go on, some, you know, like I shouldn't have those kinds of thoughts, that can sometimes tie us up as well. But the kind of responsibility of this mindfulness practice is to use the mindfulness or the acknowledgement or the recognition of what's happening as a way of stepping back from our experience or stepping back from being caught so that we're not caught in it. It doesn't mean that it stops. It means that we're a little bit, we're not enmeshed in it. We're not being it. So there's a world of difference between being angry, and watching anger, knowing that you're angry. When we completely are anger, then the anger has us. If there's anger within us, and we clearly know that we're angry, without judging it or pushing it away necessarily, know that we're angry, then you clearly know that, then we aren't angry. We're not defined by it, we're not pushed around by it, but rather, there is anger, but I am not the anger. Anger is part of who I am. So there's a stepping back. Oh, I see the anger. As opposed to, oh, I'm so angry. You see that difference? So to have a deliberateness behind the knowing of what's happening moment by moment, deliberateness in the mindfulness is one step to beginning to learn how to take responsibility for how we live in the world, how we react to the world. How to take some responsibility for our ability to be independent or free from the habits of the mind, the conditioning of the mind, the reactivity of the mind. So now I'm curious to hear from you. I asked you more or less to experiment with this quality of acknowledgement in the course of the sitting. And I'm wondering if any of you would like to report back what that was like and what you might have learned or how that might have been different than how you usually meditate to bring that a little bit more deliberate quality to the knowing. Let's not do questions yet. Let's see if people respond to my question. Yes?
I also happen to have the microphone. Is that working?
Now it's working.
So it was interesting for me. I had never noticed before how when I was noticing my breath, I kind of had a certain impatience, like, yeah, another breath. When is something interesting going to happen? Uh-huh. I kind of had this, this tension, like an impatience for something juicy or interesting to happen rather than just another breath. I don't know.
So what were you caught up in? You caught up in expectation or desire for something more interesting in the breath. So what happened when you acknowledged that? Did you acknowledge that?
I did acknowledge it. I mean, when I noticed, like, oh, isn't this interesting? And it abated for just a moment or two, but then I went right back into it.
And did you acknowledge it again then?
Yeah, a number of times, but it didn't go. I mean, it went away right after I noticed it, but then it would come back.
And you have an expectation it's supposed to go away?
I do.
That's what you wanted.
Yes.
Now, did you acknowledge that you wanted it to go away?
No.
So you missed it. You're supposed to acknowledge what's going on here.
I did part of the time.
So, but what was the difference between acknowledging it versus how you were with it just before the acknowledgement?
Yeah, I had a certain tension around the meditation. I had more like, I feeling like I wanted to be doing something else. Or if I was meditating, then it should be interesting, not just breathing. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. So but then you were kind of like in that? You were kind of mired in it, those kinds of thoughts?
No, I wasn't mired in it. It was just that was my attitude towards it.
And how was it when you acknowledged it? What shifted within you as you acknowledged it? Your sense of presence, your sense of being?
I definitely felt more present, but it didn't. But the tension only lessened a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And the gravitational force was very strong. So you acknowledged it, but then you go right back in.
Exactly.
Okay. Someone else, what was your experience?
I found it difficult to acknowledge, and I guess I'm making an assumption, that I had to be more passive about the process.
You had trouble acknowledging that you were supposed to be more passive?
No, that the acknowledgement was a much more active experience
than you're used to.
Yes. I tend to more notice and let it go and try to come back to the breath without actively acknowledging, I suppose, if that activity.
It makes sense. That makes sense. It takes a while. It might be that hearing the instruction to acknowledge, it'll take a while to learn how to do it, so it's easy, relaxed. It's easy to hear that as being active, and then being too active, too proactive, too involved in it. But don't give it up. See if there's some middle ground that you can find that's useful. There's plenty of people who do mindfulness practice who do a kind of mindfulness practice where there might be the checklist approach to mindfulness. You know, like noted that, was aware of that, let's go back to the breath, you know, aware of that, and let's go to the next thing, something more interesting. And not really taking it in, not really recognizing something. And also, there's all kinds of attitudes that can be embedded in a very quick approach to mindfulness. I'll just recognize that and go back to the breath. Where we really haven't learned, or really haven't savored, or really haven't seen clearly what's there. And the idea is to be able to see clearly what's there. And so it might take a little more action than you're used to, but maybe not as much as you did tonight. And you have to experiment and find what the right balance is. And also some of what might seem like action today will become second nature after a while. It becomes like an easy thing. Now, if something is not fully acknowledged, it tends to return. It tends to... So a lot of things in psychological life, if it's not fully acknowledged, it tends to simmer or stay or linger. There's something very different that happens when something's really clearly acknowledged. And I'm sure all of you have had the experience, I hope you've had the experience, of being really acknowledged by someone else. You know, what it's like not to be acknowledged, and someone acknowledges some aspect of you. Like maybe you're grumpy. And someone says, you know, I understand, you're really grumpy today. And you go, oh, I'm glad someone realizes it. You know, it's kind of like some of the acknowledgement kind of helps, kind of makes it more like, oh, clearer, and you're less likely kind of enmeshed in it, in the acknowledgement. So someone else, please. The other thing to say about the active side of this is that, and the relaxing versus the active, it turns out that for the deeper places of relaxation, you reach it better by a certain kind of alert, active kind of presence than you do by just focusing on doing nothing and nothing and relaxing. There's a certain kind of the alert, balanced mind can actually get calmer, stiller than a mind that's emphasizing too much calmness and relaxation. Yes, please, here.
So this was interesting because all I kept coming back to, and I think now I understand what you mean by acknowledging it, what was the same three things over and over again: fatigue, pain, and worry. So, and I would just keep seeing them, and then they would go, okay, that's that again, and then, but they would just keep coming back. So maybe you were saying, should is a bad word, but the suggestion would be that I spend more time observing it. Because towards the end, I started to kind of see myself standing apart from those three things.
That could be useful. The if something is predominant that's going on, it's not useful not just to acknowledge it once, it's useful to stay with it and get to know it better. And one of the ways to get to know something better is to feel it more fully. So like with the fatigue, there's this wonderful interplay in mindfulness between acknowledging something, which is a little bit of a mental phenomena, mental activity to acknowledge something, to recognize what it is. And then the other part is to feel it. So we're really in touch with it in a deep way. And those two work wonderfully together. Sometimes we want to emphasize more the acknowledgement, because it's the realm of the acknowledgement of the mind that helps us become free. Freedom is found more there. But we don't want to be aloof or held apart from experience either. We want to step back so we're not caught in it. But we also want to feel it and sense it fully. So take one of those three things, and maybe you need to spend 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes really first acknowledging it and keep acknowledging it, but then also to really get to know it, feel it and sense it and explore it, and really get into what it's like. But the acknowledgement is supposed to help to keep you from drowning in it or getting swept away in it or believing in it or judging it or defining yourself by it or coming to conclusions because it's there. This means that I'll always be tired. You know, whatever. Just really feel it. And you might spend 5 minutes feeling each of those five things to really, and as we feel it and sense it, then the acknowledgement can be can reach further into it or be more clear, because we see it better, we know more fully. I read a study many years ago, kind of a clinical study a psychologist had written, who I guess used kind of like mindfulness principles with clients. And there was a client who had some kind of very strong psychological problem, illness or something, and was going to go travel on a bus to some other city. And I guess the therapist was a little bit worried about the client going off like that. And so the therapist gave the client an exercise to do on the bus. And that was to look out the window and keep shifting the eyes and seeing something different in the environment. So, in other words, the eyes couldn't lock in. Now, one of the interesting things, when you get caught up in our inner life, the eyes tend to not be shifting and moving as much. Don't really take, but if you keep taking in things outside, really take them in, it's harder to fall into old mental habits. So this idea then applies to the mindfulness practice. We're not trying to stop or prevent anything from being present within us. But if we can keep continuity of the noticing, this is happening now. It can be very relaxed. This is what's happening now. If we stay in that flow, the noticing is not the same thing as being swept up in some preoccupation, some reactivity. So in your situation, to stay in the flow of noticing these things is to stay independent or not caught in those. If you stop the mindfulness, you probably collapse into it in some way. And so the mindfulness helps, the acknowledgement keeps us independent. And so it takes some effort initially, especially when the mental forces are quite strong, forces of preoccupation are quite strong. But then as we keep doing it, then the muscle of mindfulness gets eventually stronger than the muscle of preoccupation. Maybe one more, since I appreciate hearing these comments. Anybody else want to say something? And you're welcome to say that something like you couldn't understand it, what I was saying, or didn't work, or anything that you want to say.
I found myself preoccupied with what I was going to call what I was thinking.
Ah, so preoccupied by what the proper label was.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, did you acknowledge that preoccupation?
Not really.
Well, everything, when you do mindfulness practice, everything that occurs within us is the proper subject for our mindfulness. If we leave something off stage, then it kind of can be there preoccupying us or bugging us or catch, you know. And it's very easy, being concerned about what the proper name is, that's about the practice, it's not the practice itself. How to say that? It's easy to leave certain things assume that some things don't belong in the domain of mindfulness. You're not supposed to pay attention to that. But you're actually supposed to learn to pay attention to everything. So if you had turned around and acknowledged your preoccupation with finding the right name, what do you think would have happened? If you'd really stop, oh, here I am, trying to come up with the right label. This is a person, here and now, is a person trying to come up with the right label. If you'd acknowledged that with that clarity, what do you think would have happened to you in the sitting?
I'm not sure. I would have moved on to something else, to another thought, I suppose.
Maybe you would have moved on to something else. Do you think that it would have lessened your preoccupation?
Might have, yeah.
Might have? Uh-huh. So that's the hope, is somehow by clearly acknowledging something, then you say, oh, this is what I'm doing. Maybe I don't have to do that. Maybe it's not so useful to do that. Maybe the acknowledgement is kind of saying, oh, this is what's happening, and I am not that. But when it's not acknowledged, then it's so easy for these things to become who we are. We very often tend to almost become a lot of our mental activity, our feelings, our preoccupations. We become almost, they kind of take over and have direct the show or kind of define what our experiences or what our concerns are. The hope is that when we clearly step back and acknowledge, oh, this is what's happening, then we don't take it to be who we are. It's just one particular thing within us. And then there might be a little more freedom around it being there. Maybe we can hold it lighter. Oh, here it is. I'm preoccupied about something. I'm trying to figure out something. And oh, I'll just hold it lighter. I won't take it so seriously. I just let it be there and acknowledge it, feel it. And perhaps it goes away, or perhaps it becomes less important and it's easier to go back to the breath. Okay, so one of the things I'm trying to convey here is that the mindfulness practice, the moment of mindfulness, mindfulness practice has different component parts, different elements to it that we can emphasize. And today I'm trying to emphasize the part that has to do with clearly acknowledging what is present, what is there. So not some vague awareness, not some generalized kind of soft awareness, not a quick kind of noting of something going back to the breath, but some kind of clarity or strength of recognition, a fullness of recognition. In the same way as perhaps you would go to some kind of gathering of people and someone sees you and comes over to shake your hand. And you really notice when the person's really there for you, stopped and is really present for you. Even if it's just for a moment, you really, oh, that person for a moment was really there, acknowledged me, was present for me. As opposed to someone who comes and shakes your hand, hey, Gil, nice to see you. And as soon as their hand goes in your hand, their hand goes limp as they go off to look at someone else. You know, I don't really feel acknowledged then. I feel like almost dismissed. So to offer that kind of clarity, but not to get busy, not to get assertive about this. Do it in a calm way, relaxed way. Oh, this in-breath. This is an in-breath. This is a listening to a sound. This is what it's like. This is an out-breath. This is an ache in my knee. This is an ache. And part of the reason to do it slowly like that is after the acknowledgement, to take a moment to feel it, to really kind of take it in. And as you're doing this, see if the sense of being independent from the experience, not being defined by it, becomes stronger. My guess is you'll find yourself getting, if you do this, both calmer and more alert. At the end of the sitting, you'll find a sort of heightened sense of alertness from that kind of clarity of knowing this is what's going, this is going on. So experiment with that for the week and see if that adds more strength and oomph and something to your meditation. The other side of this is that mindfulness, being mindful, can be quite difficult because there are strong preoccupations in the mind. And an important part of mindfulness is acknowledging, recognizing these preoccupations. The very things that make it difficult for us to be mindful become the subject of mindfulness. So rather than letting something is distracting, say you're caught up in some kind of vendetta, angry with someone, you're thinking angry thoughts, and your mind keeps going off into that vendetta, rather than just kind of getting upset and trying to come back to the breath, trying to come back to the present moment, but you can't because of these thoughts, then at some point, those preoccupations, those distractions, are taken on as the subject of meditation. If you get really tired, and sleepiness makes it really hard to be mindful, then at some point we turn and let the sleepiness become the subject of mindfulness. If there's a lot of agitation that makes it hard to be present for the breath or for anything else, at some point, if that's the very thing that's making it difficult to be present becomes what we turn our attention towards to see. It means that whatever is making meditation difficult is the appropriate thing to pay attention to. And it's a little bit like judo or aikido, where, you know, you go find your opponent's force and you go with it. So rather than fighting a preoccupation or trying to, you know, fight against it, we can turn towards it, recognize that it's there, and then practice clearly acknowledging, feeling, being present, and experimenting with the mindfulness, experimenting with acknowledgement, where can you see it and recognizing it without being caught by it. In a sense, step back from it and see it. Oh, here is a person with a vendetta. Here's all these vendetta kind of thoughts and angry thoughts. As opposed to being in it, so you'd say, boy, am I angry. This means I'll always be angry. This means I'm a terrible person. Mindfulness is not to get pulled into the world of that, but to kind of stand your ground, sit upright, be upright, and say, oh, here is anger. I'm not going to be pulled into it. I'm not going to be pushed around by it. I'm just going to recognize it. Anger. It's like my son, as before I came down here, 11-year-old son, and boy, was he upset this evening because his parents would not open an account for him on eBay. It was a, you know, kind of a crisis in the household. So it wasn't anything to get angry about. I mean, the poor kid was suffering. But it wasn't something to ignore either, but, you know, to kind of just be upright and be present and say, this is the deal. No, you cannot open an account. No, we're not going to help you open an account on eBay. And we kind of hold our ground, kept our balance, stayed centered. And there were occasional times I got impatient and wanted to do something different. But I kind of stayed my ground and balanced, and, you know, he could flail away or do what he needed to do. And I wasn't angry, I wasn't abandoning him, just, you know, I'm centered in here. Independent, but present. So in the same way, to experiment with the mindfulness, where to notice what the preoccupation is, what keeps pulling us into its world, and turn towards it and say, wow, am I ever angry? There's a lot of anger here. But then to see if we can find a centered place to see it. Oh, look, look, this is what's happening. So it turns out a very important part of mindfulness practice is paying attention to those things that make it hard for us to be mindful. Isn't that great? Rather than being, you know, upset about it or feeling that you're a failure because you can't be mindful. The whole thing is set up, in big part, so that you can notice what is making it difficult for you to be mindful. And then we turn towards it and acknowledge it. Oh, this is what's happening. We acknowledge it, and as we acknowledge it, then offer it whatever presence that is useful. Feel it more carefully, if that's useful. Name it more precisely, if that's useful. Soften around it, if that's useful. Maybe it's useful to kind of find some kind of acceptance of it. Not accepting of it like it can do whatever it wants, but acceptance involves not being in conflict with it, not judging it yourself, or just letting it be. Now, as we do this, starting to acknowledge or see or be mindful of what makes it difficult for us to be mindful, it's helpful to notice if there's any common patterns in what it is that preoccupies you. Are there any common distractions that you have? Because once you start, wait a minute, it seems like 4 out of every 5 distractions that I have has to do with desire, wanting something. Or 4 out of every 5 distractions that I have, preoccupation I have, is planning the future, is fear-based, or is aversive, or involves doubt about something, hesitation and doubt. So it's possible sometimes to notice that there are particular patterns of what the mind tends to do. And different people, at different times for different reasons, have different predispositions to certain patterns of preoccupation. And one of the ways to help us become freer is to start becoming clearer and clearer about what our patterns are, our common tendencies. And as we become more aware of our common tendencies, we want to spend more time studying that tendency to see how it works. So if your tendency of preoccupation is desire, then you want to become a student of desire. Not so you can desire better, but so you can see how desire casts its spell over you. How you get pulled into the allure and the promise of desire. If aversion is your game, then you want to kind of become a student of aversion. And not judgmental, not to criticize yourself, feel bad about yourself for being aversive, but to really understand how aversion works, how it might, you know, affect how you see your experience, the kind of veil of interpretation that goes on top of things when aversion is present, what the hooks are for aversions, what is it that fuels it, kind of begin studying these things. So in the Buddhist tradition, in the mindfulness tradition, we say that there are 5 primary preoccupations that make it difficult to be present. And I'm sure you can come up with more of them, but this is the 5 that we tend to emphasize a lot. And these are called the 5 hindrances. So the first is desire. The second is aversion. The third is lethargy and weariness. The fourth is anxiety and restlessness. And the fifth is doubt. And you'll get these. I have a handout. You'll see these 5 on it. And so in our tradition, we say it's very useful to begin noticing which of these 5 tends to be the common pattern that arises for you when you meditate. As you see the common pattern of it, then it's easier to be kind of prepared for it. Last week, every time I sit down, I get pulled into the world of desire. I think when I sit down now, I'm going to have to be a little bit more alert to notice how that works. How does I get pulled into desire? Well, isn't this interesting? I only get pulled into desire right after I start feeling uncomfortable or only when I, you know, meditation was fine for the first 3.5 minutes, and then I got impatient. And it's whenever I get impatient that desire comes in. I start thinking about that vacation in San Diego that I can do on the beach. You know, so, oh, there's a connection between feeling discomfort and getting caught up in this preoccupation. So as we see the patterns and get to know them more and more, we can start bringing a greater kind of investigation or understanding to what is actually going on, what are the details, what are the dynamics going on as we meditate. So all of this takes a certain degree of heightened monitoring of what's going on. It means when we do mindfulness practice, you don't want to only emphasize relaxation and becoming calm. Being relaxed and at ease is an important part of this, but you also want to bring a certain kind of, dare I say the word, work. You're actually kind of working it, kind of, you know, kind of looking and seeing, monitoring, what's going on here? And there's plenty of activities in our daily life where monitoring is a very important part of what we do, and no one calls it work. No one seems to complain about it. I would say that riding a bicycle requires a lot of monitoring. You know, a lot of adjustments, kind of monitoring the environment around us, monitoring how we relate to it, monitoring our energy and what goes on inside of us, our balance. And once you learn how to ride a bicycle, all the many, many ways of monitoring that we do become second nature. But when you're first learning to ride a bicycle, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit, takes work, you know, it's kind of like, oh, this is, you know. But once you learn, it becomes easier and easier. So the active side of this meditation practice is what I'm emphasizing tonight. And those of you who are interested to try, you might experiment with or stretch yourself a little bit into this active side of acknowledging, of watching, of recognizing what's there, and see how that affects your meditation. See what goes on there. To help you with this, I have this handout. And the handout has... is something for you to use after your daily meditation. So after your meditation, you pull out your handout here, and it has a checklist. And it's for you to sit back, take a couple of minutes, to think back, reflect back over the meditation session you just had. And without judgment, recognize and evaluate the absence and presence of different things. And how strong the degree of presence of these things were. So, for example, was there any calmness during that sitting? And in a scale of 1 to 10, how calm were you? 1 being, I don't think so. And 10 being, boy, was like, 10 I guess would mean like you were like a completely limp. As calm as you can possibly imagine. What about how alert were you? Do you feel, you were somewhat alert, but there was no absence of alertness, but it wasn't that strong, so maybe you put it a 4. I don't know. What was the strength of your preoccupation? How strong were your preoccupations? Wow, actually I sat for 30 minutes and for 25 minutes I was doing my vendetta. So 25 minutes maybe is not 30 minutes, so I'll give it a 9. How strong was your ability to let go? So a thought arises, could you let go of it and come back? Just kind of like, how strong was your mindfulness? How strong was your motivation in the practice? How in touch were you with your body? What degree of concentration did you have? What was the quality of your effort? Was there a good effort? Was there a lot of effort? Was there hardly any effort at all? How quiet did the thinking mind become? How much did you enjoy it, the meditation? Was there enjoyment? Now, all these things are not meant to be a grade. It's not meant like to judge you this good, bad meditation or bad meditation, but it's to help sensitize you to the kinds of things you might notice as you meditate. When you notice it, don't get caught up in trying to fix anything. Simply noticing it, being aware of these things, begins to shift and change the inner landscape. And then it's interesting to watch how these things shift over the week. So each day, to write down these things, and then the end of the week, 7 days, you can look and kind of look and see what the patterns are. You might not have noticed if you hadn't written this down. You might not have noticed that, I had no idea that I had so little motivation. I gave one or two every day to my motivation in meditation. What's going on there? Maybe I need to look at the issue of motivation. Or I feel alert enough, but I never report any calm. What's the absence of calm like? What's going on there? What would it take to become more calm? So I'm hoping that this kind of monitoring doesn't tie you up in becoming self-conscious, but it kind of begins to kind of open up a world of heightened awareness of what's going on in your inner life, that active side of the mindfulness practice. And then the second part of this handout is also at the end of the sitting to also look at these five hindrances, these five preoccupations, and very matter-of-factly rate the presence and absence of those. Was there a lot of desire, caught up in desire, thoughts of desire, or was there none, or was there a moderate amount? And what about aversion and the other ones? And again, but just simply recording this, reflecting on and recording it, I'm hoping that it heightens your sensitivity and mindfulness and awareness without being judgmental, without being manipulative, without feeling it's right or wrong, but just kind of brings a greater sensitivity to the experience of meditation. And as that more active meditation becomes more something active, more kind of more to notice, hopefully your meditation becomes crisper and cleaner and also more peaceful as well. Not more busy, but more peaceful, because you're less likely to be swept up in these things, to be caught by them. Is that making some sense? Does it seem okay to you? I guess I can't ask that question, because would any of you say no? You're welcome to say no. So let's see how that goes for you. And when we come back next week, we'll kind of talk about this a little bit, and then we'll switch gears and take up a whole other angle for this mindfulness practice. So now we have about 5 minutes before the end. Would you like to ask any questions or anything about this so far? Yes.
In trying to understand the difference between noticing something and then really acknowledging it, it seems like it would be really easy to go too far in the other direction.
Yes.
So could you say a little bit about how do you know not to go too far?
Yeah. Don't worry about going too far. I like to think of mindfulness as being self-correcting. So say you go too far, after a while you're going to find yourself a little bit tense or frustrated or a little bit agitated. And then you know, oh, look at that, I'm agitated. What's going on? Oh, I think I'm trying too hard. Okay, that means it's time to make a correction. Okay, let's back off. Let's relax this noticing thing. Let's keep noticing, but let's not do it so adamantly. Let's see, maybe I can make it softer, more relaxed. So there's a monitoring that goes on in mindfulness practice. We monitor the effort we're making. And you're never going to find the right effort. That once you find it, it's always going to be the same. The amount of effort we're making practice is constantly shifting. And so there's a trial and error approach to finding just the right balance. And then, and trial and error means we make a little bit too much effort. After a while we realize this is not quite, this seems feels like too much. and then we come back to balance for a while, and maybe it's too little, and then, oh, that's too complacent. I'm just too lackadaisical about it. I think I need to tighten up a little bit. So the idea is to be, the noticing, the monitoring aspect of mindfulness helps you to correct for those kinds of things. But in the meantime, don't worry about it. Learn from your mistakes. So, this is what you expected tonight? So, I hope that you can experiment with all this, and if some of you would pass out these sheets, thank you, Diana, and if you have any questions, you're welcome to come up here and ask me, and I'll do my best to respond. And if you have any questions about IMC, some of you might be new to IMC, you can ask me as well, but also Diana here is managing tonight, so you can ask Diana if you have any questions about being here. So, thank you very much.